Welcome to this week's Monday meeting. Today is March 25th, 2024. Monday meetings are a chance for motion designers from around the globe to connect, ask questions, share inspiration, and engage with industry-leading artists on a level playing field. I'm your host, Jen Van Horn, and also with me is our co-host, Mark Sinozia. And today, we'll be having an open discussion, so please have your questions, topics, or tips ready. If you have a question, please use the raise your hand button in Zoom to be called on. And if you're unable to ask, please type question in the chat and we will answer them for you. As usual, this call will be recorded. And if you have any concerns about something said on the call, let us know and we'll make sure to edit it out for the podcast release. So I wanted to open it up to the floor. Really free for all. Any topic you want to throw out there, maybe you have a question or an issue that you're working through, or maybe you were inspired by something over the weekend or last week. Y'all know how I hate awkward silences. So hopefully someone will jump in right away with something. Come on. Come on, you guys. It's Monday. You got this. Mark has a question or something. Yeah.
I have an announcement.
Okay. Go for it.
Hopefully, by the end of this meeting today, I will have the Camp MoGraph website up and you all be able to go check it out after this meeting. I'm in the final sprint here. So stay tuned. I'll let you know at the end of the meeting.
Sounds good. And Mark, is Camp MoGraph Australia, are those tickets still available or did that lock down yet?
Still available. Yep. May 1st is the cutoff date. And like I said, last week we added PJ Richardson as our third fireside chat. And really stoked about that. But tickets still on sale. And for anyone who has questions about the Australia camp, feel free to hit me up. It is a newer zone that we're bringing camp to. And so some people have been having some questions and whatnot. So always feel free to reach out.
Nice. And also a special thank you for our Patreon supporters. We love you guys. And we're trying to think of some ideas to give you some little extra nuggets for being in our Patreon. So, and if you haven't checked out our Patreon yet, there is a link on our website, mondaymeeting.org.
I don't have a topic, but I have something fun that happened to me like last week that I'm going to share. And it's kind of related to what we do because we all have to post on social media and we are bound by the algorithms and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Last week or the week before, I did a post on LinkedIn about the timeline, the editing timeline of Dune, the second film, which is, of course, bonkers. Because if you look at it, it's just like there's so many cuts. It's just, it's amazing in one sense and it's scary in another. But that's not the thing that happened that to me, which is funny, is like I've done like hundreds of posts through my career or like even more, where I took the time to write stuff down, like select images, and those performed, let's say, average. Mm-hmm. And then I shared this thing, which I didn't even like really worked on the words or anything. Mm-hmm. And it has like literally exploded and it doesn't make sense. Like I'm still getting people trying to connect with me just through that post. It's made like, I don't know how many cases of exposure or like, they don't call it exposure. They call it impressions. Yeah. Impressions. And like, I don't know how many people added me now. It's just insane. And like, I find it like funny how sometimes you put a lot of work into something and it really fails. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you do something like almost like throwing it out of the window and that like picks traction. Then it's crazy.
I think I know how that happened. With the LinkedIn algorithm, obviously, time of day is a big thing when people are on. But also, the things, if we're posting something that's more of a throwaway and we just kind of like type it up quickly and throw it out there, we're most likely already on LinkedIn, liking other people's stuff, maybe putting some comments in, maybe commenting on what people said on your previous post. So if you're doing a lot of that traffic before you post something, that's going to boost your next post. So that versus if you're working a really long time on something, you're probably not on LinkedIn doing all of that. So you're not really doing a lot before you post. So that's something I've been recommended to do, especially also on, I think it's Instagram too, where if you reply to someone who commented on your like previous Instagram post, and then you post something else, then your new post is going to get more traffic. Like they reward you for being more active. Does that make sense? I don't know if that's maybe what happened.
But in this case, I wasn't on LinkedIn like doing stuff. I was like literally on something else, and then I saw it. It was like, oh, I'm going to share this because it's amazing. And I was, and I even credited like the original poster, you know, I even said like, hey, like this person shared, like this is this and blah, blah, blah. But I did it on a whim. And then I left LinkedIn. And then like, I don't know, a couple hours later, it had exploded. And it was like, why? You know, like.
Maybe it's like a watch pot never boils, like because you walked away. That was the secret to make it explode.
Yeah, I sent him a screenshot because it popped up on my feed and it was someone liking a post of his repost, then it was Augustine. So it was like three levels in and it was like on my feed. It was like weird knowing the original poster and how far it had like spread already.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Cody, you had your hand up. Did you have something to say?
Or ask? Yeah. I mean, I don't want to derail the LinkedIn conversation, but I was going to say, I've been thinking a lot lately about, you know, like doing more networking and kind of towing the line of like, you know, selling but not selling. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear people's thoughts on, I don't know, just like the right amount of salesmanship to have versus just like always be networking and making friends versus, you know, when to, you know, drop in like, hey, also I do motion design or whatever.
I think from what I've seen, keeping it fairly separate, or I mean, I don't know. I've been trying to network a little bit more on LinkedIn and various people's like open office hours and stuff and dropping in to say hi. And then I'm planning on putting more availability posts on LinkedIn, but more like, hey, I'm available, not, hey, do you have a job? Maybe if I've been connecting with people, dropping them a link and say, hey, if you know anybody that I have availability, like, so it's not like asking them directly, but it's like, hey, do you mind boosting this, resharing it or whatever on your LinkedIn? I'd appreciate it. Is a lighter touch is probably how I would play it. Does anyone else have any advice for that?
Well, I have a question of where you are, where you're like, where are you going to networking? Like what circles are you in? Because I mean, I find if I'm in a group of people that are not motion designers, like I've gone to a couple of events at like this design agents, branding agency in New York City, where it's like an informal event. So there's a lot of people in creative fields. And of course, like people exchange information about what kind of work they do, where they're working, like what kind of brands they work for and so forth. And people are always kind of like interested because they don't know that much about motion design. And then they're kind of just like, if we have a rapport, then they might just be like naturally interested in looking at my work and, you know, might have an idea of like, oh, I have a client who needs this. So it's like, I always focus on building like a genuine relationship and like figuring out who I have a rapport with and staying in touch with them. And like, you know, like talking about what project I might be working on, but not like, oh, I'm ready to make a sale. You know, it just kind of happens naturally. It does take patience and time though.
Mm-hmm. That's the frustrating part. It's like you want to be available, but you don't want to be too available. It's that weird trick.
It feels very similar to like dating. Like you want to be like around, but you don't want to be like too around.
Exactly.
Yeah, you have to be sort of like a little bit of the rebel, but you have to fit into the system. You know, it's literally like dating. It's that awkward position in which you have to be kind of in right into the middle, assertive enough, but like you don't have to sound like a jackass that knows everything. And I would like highlight what Natasha said is like networking outside of the motion community might work. I mean, to me, it has worked better than networking inside the motion community, because in the end, it's you're meeting people that are doing the same thing as you and are looking at the same jobs as you are. And so, sure, you will meet great people, of course. But like with nowadays context and like the lack of work we've already discussed, everybody's looking for work. So there's been less posts of like, hey, I have a gig, I have to pass it on. Like, I think everybody is retaining everything they can. So maybe going outside of those circles, like Natasha said, like they might not be in the beginning, like thinking I need a motion designer, but as soon as you explain what you do and how you do it, they might go like, oh, that's interesting, you know? And also like, you don't have to approach it like a sale, because if you go with that mentality, then you will be a salesman, like, you know, like a door-to-door salesman, sorry. Mm-hmm. And people hate those. So just talk about what you do and what you like. And I think that pretty naturally, people that might be interested in that will like remember it. Keep like follow up with people you met, like, hey, how you doing? Well, how is business? And those opportunities will happen pretty naturally, I think.
Mm-hmm. And keep track. I usually like to write little notes after I've networked at an event or online with people, just so I remember. So it's like, you can ask about their kids next time or whatever event they were going to, or that sort of thing, to make the follow-up a little more warm. And then they're like, oh, they remembered. Like, yeah, it's gonna write stuff down. And yeah, I like what Augustine said about talking about what you love, because your passion really does come through. That excitement comes through, when, especially if you're finding other people that are geeking out over the same stuff that you like. Definitely stand out that way. And I like what Natasha said too. It's you're networking with people outside of the industry, because you want to be that person sometimes where you're the only motion designer in the room, because then they're going to remember who you are, and maybe you're the only motion designer they know. So when something comes up, and if you're reaching out to studios, maybe you freelance for studios before or something, and you want to make sure that they know that you're available. Like, there is an etiquette to that. I feel like we had a couple different CampMograph presentations on that too, or when do you reach out to the producers and, you know, that sort of thing. And really it's like your name, your availability, what you do in the subject line, keeping it super short and sweet, maybe like at the beginning of the month, just be like, hey, just so you know, I have availability this month if you need somebody, but like, don't tell them your whole life story or like go into like every little thing that you do. Like, so keeping that easy breezy in their inbox. And Lisa had a really great topic here in the chat. So Lisa, you finished, you're almost done with Illustration for Motion. Yay. I'm TAing for that class, by the way. It's really great. You guys should sign up next semester if you haven't taken it. And you want to know more about reels that include illustration work and animation. And yeah, those are tricky. Actually, I do highly recommend Ryan Summers' Demo Reel Dash, because he'll definitely go over different ways to build demo reels. And for me, I can't think of any really good references. Well, I can, but I can't remember who they were. So they're in my head. But I've seen some really good ones where you could still put illustrated work that's not moving, and you just have to get pretty fancy with your camera angles, your zooms, maybe having something where it's like, you know, like the boxes, you know, like Inception kind of thing. Like there's different ways you can add motion to a static image. And that's definitely what I would suggest. But if anyone else has any references or cool reels that they know of that include illustration work with animation, if you could drop that in the chat for Lisa, or if you want to talk about it, that'd be awesome. Augustine, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I would recommend you to look at the last demo reel from Nidia Diaz.
Nidia
Diaz? She's not an illustrator, so she does 3D work.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say look at that, because her reel is not only animation, there's also stills from the renders or like the like boards she had to build for those projects to be approved. And all that is synced with music. And what is really great is that it's not like there's no motion into those. Like every motion was stripped from it to keep like the picturesque, like pictorial aspect of the render or the image. And what was like prioritized was design and like the layout of those images. And the cuts of those stills are like following the music, and it works really well. And that to me made like a way stronger impression than a lot of stuff that I've seen animated, which is the copy of a copy of something or like the copy of a tutorial or whatever. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's better to have something like static but well designed and like well cut with the music, and that has an intention, than just making it move for the sake of making it move. So that's my advice as more as an art director and a director. Mm-hmm. When I saw that thing, I will find it and post it into the chat. But yeah, those are my two cents.
That's great.
That's exactly what I was looking for. I'm kind of in that space where I have some, you know, some illustration. I just need to get something out there, right? And I've got so much work to do now. I'm not going to be taking classes for a while and just sit back and just create some work. And I am signed up for the Demo Reel Dash, which I'm going to start as well. So nice. Yeah, that sounds like it's right on target for what I'm looking for. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I found it, so I'll post it now.
Oh, awesome. Also, Jacob posted showreels.com, another really good resource in the chat. We'll put that in the show notes as well. And yeah, definitely you don't want to have a moving scene transition to a non-moving scene. That definitely feels like you hit a wall when you're watching them. So considering flow, match cuts, that sort of thing, even if you have to throw in like a camera zoom here and there to get that to move better. Sorry, my brain today, you guys, it's having a Monday. That's all I'm going to say. Does anyone else have any questions, tips, topics? Oh, I love these.
I was going to say you might want to partner with someone who wants to animate stuff more if you don't want to do as much for that, and have them collaborate and animate your own stuff.
That's a great tip.
That way you can show that you're also collaborating too on top of that. So maybe a good way to do it.
Yeah, and just keep it like either in the notes or maybe in the corner, like animated by, or you know, that sort of, so you know that your clients know exactly what you did on each clip. All right.
How frequently is everybody updating your reel? Out of curiosity. Doing like once a year.
I try. I've been doing a lot of different things. So I feel like I need to make different reels for different things. Like I have a character reel for my explainer video stuff, but I spent the last year and a half doing advertisements for mobile video games. So it's like completely different. So yeah, I try to do that, or I'll throw maybe a string out of a couple projects that I like. So it's sort of like a real light kind of thing, or a real junior. Yeah, I try once a year, but that's the thing too. And that's what I also love about Demo Reel Dash, is there's a really great way where you could build your reel where you don't have to redo the whole thing every year. You're just pulling the older clips and dropping in the new ones. So paying attention to the timing of the beats of the song. So you can even swap out the song as long as it's the same beat count. So everything will still line up, like stuff like that, where you're working smart, not hard, is going to be really great, especially if you're slammed and you need a new reel, then things like that will help you save you some time for sure. Okay. What's your name? I can't your hand up.
Oh, sorry. I usually change my name to like Zoom reverts it to something different. But my name's Elise.
Elise. Okay. Yes.
So along those same lines, I was wondering how people feel about having multiple reels and how you go about that. Because personally, I do character animation, but I also do motion graphics. And I feel like maybe I got to start having multiple reels of all of the things I do, because I show people one reel and they're like, oh, it looks like you do this instead, or like, I don't see enough character animation, or I don't see enough motion graphics, and I'm wondering, do I need, like, my cartwheel is kind of a short conglomeration of everything that I do, but maybe I gotta have like secret reel, like unlisted reels that I send out to people when I'm like applying for a job, or I'm not sure how to organize everything since I do have like a variety of work.
I think instead of creating full different reels, I think you could probably remix the same reel and just like put more of your character stuff at the head and fill that out, and then swap it when you want to do more of the motion graphics stuff. And you can probably even have the same song. But like I said, if you can have it where like it's cutting on the same beat, it's easy to swap them in and out. So I think that would probably be how I would do it, just to save me time. And that way I'm not spending a lot of time on cutting something completely different. And I've also heard that too with the websites, having a website that's a little bit more character four versus something that's a little more motion graphics. I feel like I could have the same site, but maybe the main page is different. And I just, and it's, everything still kind of links to the same stuff. Like I have an Adobe portfolio, so it really makes it pretty easy to create several of the same sites. You just like kind of like duplicate it and then just change out the whatever that front page is. So I think that's how I'm going to do it. And then depending on who I'm applying to or throwing stuff over to, I'll just send them the correct link. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, you can make that smart, not hard.
Yeah, exactly. I think I can make it on my website where it has like, I could do like my website/ and then like motion graphics or character animation, maybe send out different links to people. But thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah, no problem. Jonty, you have your hand up.
Yeah. Can you hear me? You can hear me. I'm going to weigh in. I'm going to weigh in on this as well.
Do it.
So I had this issue. Hello, Elise. It's been a while.
Hello.
I had the same sort of issue quite a while back where I kind of target two different industries. So one industry that I work quite heavily in is events production, and the other bit is kind of marketing and advertising, your typical motion graphic stuff. And I received feedback from the wonderful people at Motion Hatch, from Haley Akins and a few other people from there. And they suggested to me basically to split, like have almost, I basically have to have three reels. So I have a reel for people who just generally come to my website. And then I have a reel and a page that is basically a duplicate of like my main page, but it's specifically for the events production work. And I have one that is specifically for the marketing and advertising. And it's because if I put the marketing and advertising and events all in one reel, the two of them clash. So I get some people going, you should put the projection mapping stuff first. And then I've got other people going, oh, no, you should put the marketing stuff first because that looks better. And it's kind of a positioning thing. And I'd say, like, you can then, if you then like tie it to your website, so you've got different pages for different people you're aiming it at, you can then tie that to the emails and the links that you're sending people as well, because then like you can point people to your website and say that this is my main website, and people will go, oh great, I like that work, and then you're actually showing them the work that you want to show them rather than all of the random other things that you might end up doing. I can also send links. I might send you some links or something later because we chat.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Also, when you're building your reel, something to keep in mind is putting your strongest work at the front and then maybe your second strongest work at the back, depending on how long it is. Don't have it. I feel like 30 to 40 seconds is like the sweet spot for a reel. Like it doesn't have to be super long. You want a really strong quality, not quantity. Also not duplicating shots from like the same project, because that's always stands out to me when I'm looking at reels. That would be my two cents on that for those of you who haven't built a reel yet. Has anyone actually in this meeting not built a reel yet for themselves, like at all?
Yeah, I've never had one.
What? That surprises me because you have all of your great plugin work stuff and you have some really great Lottie things. I'm very surprised you don't have
I never actually found the use for it because I think, Jen, you know the story. Mm-hmm. I work primarily as only through a platform that through Upwork, because I kind of started doing this whole thing late in life, and then nobody has reels there. You just have sort of reviews with your projects, and that's what I use. I mean, I made a website, but mm-hmm. I categorized stuff, but that's about it.
Interesting. Augustine, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I have a different like point of view or like approach, because I've had historically always two reels, mm-hmm. one for my live action work and one for the motion work. And first of all, it's like very hard to maintain both. But also, and this is a discussion we already had also with Ryan Summers, is mm-hmm. that like a reel, and that's where I disagree a little bit on the I swap shots in and out, because a reel needs to have intention, and like any edit, I think like shots need to connect between each other, either through motion, either through like, I don't know, morph cuts, whatever you want, but it needs to feel like something that flows to each other, like in one into each other. And I think that just like swapping shots might not work as good. And so I'm at the point where instead of having two reels, my next reel that will come soon, I hope, I'm going to merge everything. I'm going to merge live action and motion. And what I do to target different clients is when I reach them out, I've already linked projects that specifically target what they are requesting. So mm-hmm. instead of sending a reel, because the reel kind of like is the statement of, here is all my talent, you know, like, and I don't want them to see me only as an animator or only as a director, because I'm way more than that. And I can solve a lot more problems than that thing. And that's my opinion. And I think it's that's added value instead of like, okay, he's only an animator, so he will be only animating. So you're cutting yourself from a lot of like opportunities that may arise with that client. And so I rather have a reel that is like, hey, this is the talent I have to give. And then when a client is saying, I'm looking for an animator, I can chime in and say like, hey, I can animate. Like here, there's a list of projects where I've worked on specifically what you're asking. And in case you want to know what my other skills are, here is my reel and my website. I mean, because otherwise, like handling two websites, like two reels and two things, we already have like so little time for ourselves mm-hmm. that it becomes insane. Like, and that's my take now. It's like, no, why? That's my approach. That's what I'm going to do this year, at least.
I actually really like that. I've done that when I've done quotes for clients, because I've done so many explainer videos in all kinds of different styles, from like watercolor bleeds to lip syncs, you know. So I've timed myself over the years, so I know exactly how long it's going to take me. So I'll send them two or three examples of something similar to what they're looking for, and I'll say, this is how long it took me, these were the kind of obstacles I had, and this is why I'm charging this. And they really appreciate that. So being able to have that kind of point of reference when you get further in your career is going to be really helpful when you're pitching new clients. Cons, you have your hand up. Oh, you're muted.
Morning, guys.
Good morning.
I had a couple things kind of came to mind to bounce off. Mainly what Augustine and Ilya were saying, where, the importance of a reel, I think, is kind of interesting. It's definitely like different for different people, I think. Like my generalist kind of like reel, I don't think it like gravitates random people to get me work. I feel like more times than ever I end up showing it off to people, kind of like, oh, this is what I can do. Sometimes in like a client setting, I can use it to like show off, like I can do a lot of things or whatever. And lately I've been trying to like kind of think about like, okay, here's a 3D reel, here's a 2D reel, here's how I can kind of like target people specifically a little bit more. But yeah, generally I think like it's more effective to like per project think about like, what does this client need and what can I show them? Not like, oh, here's all this stuff to kind of like confuse them with, so to speak. So I don't know, like maybe different people have like a different approach. Like if you're getting people to reach out to you because you're posting your reel in all the right places, that might be an approach. But to me, I've always thought a little bit like, I'm building this reel to get work. I actually get into this kind of issue, I guess, like maybe some other people have this similar experience. For like a decade, I was in this mode of like, oh, if I don't have work, I'm gonna work on my reel because my work is to find work. But then I get a job and it's like, okay, I'm gonna put the reel to the side because now I got work. And then it's like the next time I have time to put into my reel, I do that again. And then I'm like, oh, I'm gonna scrap this because all this is like a year old now. And then I kept doing that for like a decade. And then now I got my 2023 reel finally after like my 2015 reel was like way outdated. And I still don't know whether like it's really getting me work, but I feel like proud. And I saw somebody in the chat, but like, don't put a date on your reel. And I like stamp that date on there because I'm like, I haven't made one in like a decade, you know, or I've made many. I haven't like completed them because I'd gotten the work that it was supposed to get, you know, or whatever. But yeah, I am trying to like do this thing that a couple of people are talking about, like compartmentalizing a little bit, where I have like my 3D reel that was main focus, and then 2D reel, and then kind of like experimental and like more like artistic kind of stuff that's more my own that maybe some people would be interested in, but maybe not like some of my current clients. But my question, I guess, to a couple of people was like, what would be the alternative for like a reel to like a B2B client, right? Because it's like we're talking about reels where like an agency might look at it and understand what that is, like, oh, here's the talent, right? But to like a B2B client, they're like, what the fuck is this? You know, I've been finding myself kind of like trying to speculate, like sort of like, well, what is this client's actual need? And then like, how do I explain like, you know, the story that I want to provide with a certain art aesthetic and maybe some references. But like, I've been kind of struggling with that part of the communication when trying to like reach out with like B2B clients. Like I wouldn't show them my reel because they'd be like, cool, right?
Right. I mean, you could, especially like under your reel, have links to case studies. I would build some case studies for your website. And then that way they see the process. And if you have any of the analytics for ROI, you know, if you're doing B2B, then that would be a really great place to be like, look, I did this for this client. Even if you have to make up a client for a case study, look at other people's case studies and kind of like mirror that and maybe just maybe put at the top something. Like if you're putting actual analytics, actually say like, hey, this is just like a for fun or whatever. This is, but just to show your process, because especially in a world of AI, it's nice to show your work. And I think clients just appreciate seeing a peek behind the wind or the behind the curtain a little bit.
I sort of want to lean towards that where it's like, oh yeah, I want to show the client that like, here's like, you know, the ROI after my project, right? I don't know if I could like how to put that in a reel in a minute in the same way that like, you know, I send off the reel to like an agency, right?
Yeah. Maybe just having a little write-up if you're sending a link to your reel, just be like, hey, this is the, you know, the results of this. And that's why I'm always big on asking for testimonials from clients, circling back maybe even 6 months later, just to see how it's been performing. If it's helped them get new work, you know, they'll do some of that work for you to tell you like how, you know, how it's been doing. I would highly recommend doing that if you haven't done that, circling back with old clients. And also they might have new work. It's a great excuse to go back to them and be like, hey, well, if you have another project, especially if it went really well, maybe they forgot you or something, and then it's a great way to kind of refresh that being in their minds. Yeah. I have a question actually. Does anybody have any like behind the scenes clips in their reel, like before and afters, especially if you're doing like rotoscoping and that sort of thing? Cause I'm curious about how to do that. I do a lot of photo manipulation stuff and I'd like to have some sort of mini reel, but I'm just not sure if it makes sense to have like a before and after slap next to each other, or if maybe do a wipe, or how to go about doing that.
That's a reel on its own. Yeah. You didn't have to do a reel with only BTS, like only work process, you know, okay. Like kind of like the art behind the craft or something like that, you know, like all the studios, like the Mill and stuff like that, that do those, mm-hmm. they don't add those into the project, like in the reel of the project. They do like a separate video where it's like everything that went through that. And yeah. Sometimes they do it like per project, or they do like a reel of like what a year of work it has been.
Okay. I like that. Thank you. Yeah. Cause I've definitely done some like time-lapse breakdowns before, but I think it'd be cool to, cause it's hard. I would be a professional photo retoucher if the clients would let me put their before pictures up. So I only have one client that allows me to do that. So it's kind of hard to show your work when they won't let you do that. Because, you know, you're fixing their photos. I don't want to see any sort of stray hair or wrinkle or, you know, acne that I fixed for them.
I personally always stop when I'm scrolling for like the behind the scenes, like process stuff. So it's like, it could be cool, like, you know, social media posts if the client allows.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's why I love doing these little like animation collabs, because I can record my screen and put everything up there to show my process. So if you don't have any of that kind of content, there are definitely a lot of animation collabs and design collabs out there.
I think it wouldn't make sense, like Augustine was saying, to like show like a full breakdown in a reel. But my current reel, there is like one spot where it ended up being not only like behind the scenes, but it's almost like parts of a project that I pulled out that actually didn't make it to the final spot. But to me, it was like interesting enough that I wanted to show a little bit of the stuff. And I have like really fast paced music. So I have like five shots back to back within a couple seconds of like building that up or whatever. And mm-hmm. like sort of like you get this like idea of like, oh, this person was like thinking about this process in different ways or whatever. To me, that was actually more important to show than even the final project for that little section or whatever.
Yeah, I really like that, like the ideation side of it. I think that's really good, especially if you're trying to go after an art direction kind of role. Showing that process is big. Anybody else want to jump in with a question or a topic? Got to get 20 minutes left.
I would just say that it could have been on that behind the scenes stuff. Who's the target for your reel? If the target is a producer or a creative director, we're trying to show what you and your skills to do behind the scenes makes sense. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, like it's got to show off your best work in less than a minute. So you don't have time for the behind the scenes. If that's all you got, then you're looking for a different type of role, and a reel is probably not the best place to go.
So that makes sense. I was thinking more like just like before and afters, though, like just like really quick, like make a wipe to show, especially yeah. I'm just thinking more like compositing stuff and rotoscoping, so you really see the work that went into it.
I mean, from my perspective, like if you're going for an art director, creative director role, showing the finished work speaks more volumes than you know how to move a pixel. Like they're looking for the thought process that you helped not only lead the project and the other creatives that you know to bring the project from start to finish, but they're also looking to see kind of the more cerebral, like do you have the creativity to help do this? And you know, behind the scenes stuff is super sweet, but you know, only much that, but I don't think that, and in the places where I've been looking to hire people, that plays into a bad result of
That's why I like the idea too, where you have all the finished stuff in a reel, but you have links to the behind the scenes too, like where they are viewing your reel, because it's most likely they're viewing your reel on your website or possibly Vimeo if they stumble upon it. But
when you think about like Ryan, like he talks about reviewing 200 reels at a time, like you get a minute and then you're gone. So if you're new and you only have a few shots, then maybe behind the scenes makes sense. But
no, that's not what I mean. I'm saying linked it below.
Yeah. Like
not in the reel, but yeah. So if they want to dig deeper, they can.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I always think it's super fun when you see, like, I don't know, stuff go from, you know, 0 to 100 in 10 seconds, especially if it's, you know, a crappy green screen shot. And then you can show, you know, swipe, swipe, swipe. Mm-hmm. You know, background's gone, new background, new lighting. Everything looks great.
I like those too, but that's also a very specific like compositing type of reel. Yes. They show that work. So yeah. And that's a great point with what Jeff brought up too. Know your audience, you know, who are you creating this reel for? And the same thing that Khan said, like sometimes reels are just for other motion designers for you to show off. You're like, look what I can do. But I'm a little less B2B and a little bit more connecting with other motion designers, because I like being a finisher for other motion designers who have their studios. And whenever they get overwhelmed, I like being that person that they call to help tighten things up. So yeah, really it depends on who your reel's for. And I think Augustin said in the chat too, it's a great way to show off to your bigger clients. If you want to show off like, oh, you know, like I worked for Wizards of the Coast and Colgate and Folgers and Smuckers and stuff like that. But how I do that is on my website under my About Me section, I have a full page of all of the logos of all the clients that I've worked with. So figuring out a way to use that for your credibility for your website is a cool thing to do. I've also debated too. Like I haven't really seen this in a reel, but you could have sort of, you know, like with the news, how they have the running text at the bottom. You could do like client logos, like zipping it across. Would be an interesting idea, or maybe not, whatever. I don't know. It's top of my head. Still waiting on coffee. Anybody else want to jump in? Well, Augustin, you said in the chat, there's quite a bit of stuff that you leave out of your reel. Yeah. That's, and same thing with Jeff said, like it's, you want to keep it tight and you want to keep it quality. Don't have stuff in there. If you have plenty of work to post in a reel, don't throw tutorials in there that everyone else has done. Even if you can reskin them. I mean, that's the easiest thing I think of too, when you're first starting, is you can reskin all of the stuff and you just parent the new, you know, character, you know, change shirt colors, skin color, you know, completely different things on top of it. So you're not redoing work. If you want to stand out and make it a little different, easy way to do that. Mark, you have your hand up. Mark, did you finish?
Still working on it. I'm close, baby. So just a few things after kind of listening to this discussion too, that one thing that I think a lot of us fall into the trap of doing is that trying to make our reel and do things that we think are cool for other motion designers, right? Because a lot of us can spend a lot of time really refining something or really trying to get a certain look, and that is great. But I think the main goal of making a reel is to essentially be selling yourself, right? And trying to get work from it or whatever, just awareness. And, you know, some of that might work really well for like trying to get into a studio or work with another artist or whatnot. But I often find a trap of a lot of us motion designers creating like really cool, intricate things that a client just doesn't give a shit about. It's really cool for us motion designers. And wow, how did they execute that? But like, if we're using this as a tool to get hired and whatever, like, especially if you're trying to go direct to brand, like it, sometimes we need to kind of remove ourselves from like this I don't know, closed-minded. I don't want to say closed. That's not the right word. But like get out of our own way, essentially, you know,
shift the mindset,
a bit, because, you know, it's really cool to be able to pull off a cool simulation or whatever. And like, there are the times and places for that stuff, 100%, but we shouldn't necessarily be going down these rabbit holes just to impress peers per se. Right. Like,
unless you want to work, unless you want to work with the peers.
Well, exactly. But I often find like motion designers just trying to be on the new greatest, best thing because they want to be out first and have the new thing to show on the reel and make them look like it's just, it's somewhat,
counterproductive,
but almost like incestive. In a way, is that a word?
Incestuous.
Like, I don't know. I think that's just one side of it, because really more or less what we're trying to do is show that we can tell stories. We can have good composition, design, all these things, but no one really cares that like your keyframe was eased at like 37% instead of the traditional 29 or right? Like no one fucking cares, but we could like, I'm guilty of doing this. Keep finessing that goddamn thing over and over and over. And it's like, all right, sometimes good is like done is good enough. Right. Mm-hmm. And I do know that your portfolio, your reel, this is who you are. This is how you're broadcasting your voice out to the world. So of course there's going to be a lot of scrutiny around it, but that you give it, but just like any creative, just shipping it and having it done is better than tweaking that thing to get it perfect. And then 3 years later, it's still not out. Mm-hmm. I'm raising my hand. That's me. So like I've got a super old reel, you know, and I've got a lot of great work that has never been shown in a reel or whatnot. And similar to what like Cons was saying and some other people in the call today, if you're not constantly like updating it, I see work that has never been in a reel from 2 years ago. I'm like, nope, that doesn't make the cut anymore, you know? And so it's like, really, I'm just working with stuff I've produced in the last 6 months, you know, to create that new reel. Because I don't know, again, it's my own thought of like, oh, I could do better. I have better stuff now. I don't feel like that's good enough to show. And anyway, it's that kind of creative mindset that, is always like refine. And a lot of times we can get caught in that cycle. Right.
Right. And I also think it's interesting too, that like a lot of us are like obsessed with getting our reels looked at by other motion designers for review, when maybe we should be asking past clients if they'll take
clients
a look.
Or even just like editor friends or like other designers, like, because from my experience and the conversations I've had with other designers and product people and marketing people, they see like whatever work we put out and they're like, holy shit, that's fucking rad. But if we send it to all motion designers, they're like, all right, cool. Well, yeah, I saw, is that a GSG texture? You might want to right? Like we can see, we know how the sausage is made. So we can see all these little internal things that like will hang us up and essentially, like you said, Jen, make us like counterproductive, right? And we're just going so far down this one thing that 99.9% of the people that see it won't even notice, you know? So
That's why I like posting stuff like on Facebook, because it's all of my normie friends, right?
Exactly.
To look at stuff. But then I'll have like one friend who's a designer who just can't help herself and has to critique everything I post. And I was like, girl, this isn't for you. It's for my parents to say I did a good job and for my friends to say that I'm doing amazing. I don't
Well, and critiques. Can I let me give you one more real world example from my perspective. I sent it wasn't a reel, but it was kind of like an intro thing to my buddy who's a phenomenal graphic designer. He's like, wow, that looks cool. You should turn the type a little bit more like this. Ugh. Like stuff that I just went over my head, right? But he saw it And that just little, that little tidbit made my reel better. And like any other creative director or someone who saw it, that kerning's now better and correct or whatever, right? And it's maybe those little things that I need help with, not like editing my piece, you know?
Yeah, like know the people that where your weaknesses are, know that that's their strength, and then ask them to do a pass. I think I'm also this, I'm not super strong typography skills yet, still working on that. But I have a few creative directors where I'll throw stuff over, be like, hey, you know, take a look at this. What's wrong with it? But for the most part, I want compliments. I'll have days where I'm like, I just want compliments and most post stuff on Facebook. Augustine, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I want to say two things. Like, one is like bounce on something that Cons said, and he was keeping the weird shit out because it was maybe too weird for clients. And I was gonna say, like, put that in, man. Like, just don't leave it out, because you never, like, honestly, you never know what's going on through the mind of a client. And if you try to do that, first of all, you're acting like an agency. An agency, like, I would say 70% of the time they get it wrong. Because every time they go like, no, the client thinks this or like this. And then you go like, okay, but let's show them. And so you go through like a shit show. And then at the end, they go like, oh, but we, don't you have anything else? And then you show what you had in mind in the beginning. And they go like, yeah, but that's what we want. Like, or this looks great. Or, oh, that's an interesting thing we could explore. And so I would say, like, if you have like weird stuff that is you, just put that in, because like, I would say one, like a good example is like Blink My Brain, you know, Ariel. Well, his work is full of his weirdness, you know, like people in underpants and unicorns shitting in the rainbows and stuff. And all of that has become kind of his like trademark. And he's hired for that, like for this like quirky, weird style. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go back to like the thing of the reel. It's to me, like in 60 seconds, it can be a little bit longer, but in 60 seconds, you should be able to give a good idea of who you are and what you do, you know, and no more, no less. Like, it has to be clear that what you do, and it has to, of course, like your best. I mean, I think it's dangerous to say your best work, because best work is a very subjective term.
Yeah.
Best work can be for somebody the best quality renders, and for other people might be the motion, how it flows and stuff. It's very subjective. So I would say cut something that makes sense and has intent. Like, again, I cannot insist as an art director and director that it needs to have intention.
Yeah.
It's not only that it has to look good. It's like it needs to convey a purpose and a message, like a story. And one shot needs to lead to another. If between two different projects you're cutting, one thing is falling and the next one is typography exploding, well, there's motivation there in the motion and the connection of those shots. Mm-hmm. And that needs to be there. Because that's what also Ryan Summers says a lot. It's like he's seen like a lot of reels where work can be amazing, but there's so little intention in the reel that he ends up like skipping and not retaining that person. Because, yeah, technically speaking, that person is good. But like artistically or narratively speaking, not so great. Or at least that's not what the reel conveys. Mm-hmm. And so like, I'm saying 60 seconds because it's kind of the same with when you start doing typography and colors. Everybody will tell you it has to look first good in black and white.
Right.
You know, so strip everything that's like fluff, leave the bare bones and see if that works and if that has intention. And then you can start like tweaking here and there to add fluff, to add like that little thing or that little shot or that little stuff. Mm-hmm. But have first like a skeleton that says like, this is who I am. This is what I do. And this is kind of like my story. I know it might sound like abstract, sound like that. It even starts with the music choice, you know?
Well, yes and no. Music choice, like Ryan doesn't he doesn't look, he doesn't have the music on when he looks at reels.
No,
so
I know. No, but I'm not talking about Ryan. I'm not doing a reel for Ryan.
Right.
I'm just saying that everything needs to, I mean, that's my approach, needs to emotionally talk to me, even the music. Mm-hmm. You know, like I chose that music because this, because the tempo and this and the structure and this evokes this to me. Mm-hmm. And I know that might sound like maybe pushing too far, but at least to me, when I end up cutting that thing or an edit without even talking real or an edit, I like my guts are in there in a way. And that shows. And some people will love it. Some people won't like it. You cannot please everybody, but at least it has intention. And that makes a lot of difference.
And whatever you do, do not put a song that is copyrighted in your reel. It's a real bad move. I've seen a lot of reels where they're popular songs. It's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you don't have the license to use that. You are selling yourself.
You can. You can. Yeah.
I don't know, for me it puts a really bad taste in.
You can email the band and ask like, hey, I'm doing a reel, can I use your track? Like, and you show them a copy, most of the band will tell you no problem.
Yeah, honestly. If you do that, but people aren't doing that from what I've seen. They're just throwing in a popular music and it's like, wow, they just don't care about copyright. That makes me nervous. Why am I going to work with this person? So I don't know. I have a background in copyright.
I would say 100% that, Jen, 100%. Like, sorry, don't use a Drake song in your fucking reel. Like,
right. Yeah. Mm-mm.
You obviously don't have the rights. But I have used copyrighted material for audio for my reels in the past. And I have emailed bands randomly, like LCD Sound System, right? Mm-hmm. A steel drum band that I found. And they're like, oh, cool. Yeah, no problem. You're not... like it was just touch base. And I mean, shit, my reel probably has like 300 views on it. I don't know. You know, like they don't fucking care. But here's another thing too. This is a benefit of actually posting your reel on YouTube. YouTube does have licensing for a shit ton of music. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to post your reel on YouTube, you might want to go through their library of all their popular songs. I mean, I think they have a licensing deal with like Universal or someone, tons of music, and it won't get flagged. So
do you know how much the licensing is?
No, it's free. They offer it. The only thing that you can't do is monetize it, which if you're trying to monetize your reel, that's a little shady anyway, but like, yeah. But so it's a great resource. It's a cool little hack. I actually did it at for some client work because they wanted to use a song and they couldn't afford it. And we figured out that it was on YouTube licensed and they decided not to monetize it and we could use the song. So it was a pretty interesting workaround, but
that's cool.
Something to consider.
I never put anything with lyrics in it because I feel like it takes me, I'm like focusing more on the song than I am the work. So I usually keep it to an audio jungle kind of thing. Like it's 10, 20 bucks for the year if I'm doing a new reel. Like
I will say this too. Like if you've never experimented with music production, you might not want to use your first track for your reel, but it's a really fun thing if you've never experimented with like making music.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of crossover between motion graphics, editing, kind of layer based stuff, and it's always kind of fun to experiment with that type of stuff. So if you can make a cool little track for your reel, that might be a great use case.
Yeah,
I will also say that, like, you know, like the choice of music is a statement. Like I've seen reels where like it's super fast, like crazy movements, motion, and they have like a classical track underneath that's super calm. But those match perfectly. Like the contrast is beautiful. And then you have the other way around. You have like very slow stuff. And then suddenly you hear like guitars and stuff. Like, so that's also like a very strong statement. And again, it's about triggering emotions. So if you manage to do that, I think that's an achievement already. You know, that's already like points on your side because the person will be like, oh, wow. You know, like maybe they don't know what to do about it, but they will go like, great.
And that's why I like how everyone kind of has their own sort of personal pull to different music. Like EJ said, he likes using lyrics in your reels. I actually have seen reels where they have, you know, song lyrics that match the work that you're looking at, or it has a message that, you know, lines up. That's pretty cool.
Here's a just random question too, while we're talking about audio and reels, does anyone sound design their reel?
I do. Yeah.
Because a lot of people will just cut, edit, and not use any sound, but like using certain like sound design stuff for transitioning and yada, yada, like really can add some polish to it.
Yeah. I build tension, tighter cuts. I increase the volume on the drums as it gets. Yeah. I do a lot of that, and I love sound effects. So I'll keep a lot of sound effects in there. Like I have glasses clinking and people coughing and stuff like that. Cause actually I'll think of sound effects before I think of how to animate something. I've always been really like sound forward with stuff. Cody, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to jump off the sound design comment. I don't know if anybody does much of it, but if you use Soundly, I started using Soundly a couple years ago, and I like absolutely adore it. It makes it just so much fun to add sounds in. And it's always so funny. I always like, I'll finish a video and I'm like, I guess sound effects could make like a little bit of a difference. And then it just always elevates it so, so much.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think, probably why I'm a big fan of like horror movies, because sound makes a horror movie.
Yeah.
Every time. All right, cool. Well, I think
as an alternative, you might also think about using speeches.
Oh.
I still like the Neil Gaiman speech and just use that as my reel. And I put it over music, of course, but it works with or without the sound. But I use like my favorite parts of that speech. So you can use other audio areas. Doesn't have to just be music.
That's interesting. I wonder what the licensing copyright is for that too. I guess,
if it's not monetized. Like if they came up, I could say it was under fair use because I edited it and only did a part of it.
Yeah, well, that's true. But that's a really cool idea. I haven't seen a lot of that. All right. Does anyone have any closing comments? Mark, how are you on the, are we almost there?
I'm getting close, real close. Sorry, I'm muted probably.
No, you're good.
I'm not muted. I am like ready to hit a button, but I need to make sure the mobile version looks good because I posted it last year. And I think it was Thomas who's on the call was like, yo, this looks like, I'm like, oh no. So anyway, how about this? Let me do this. Since I can't hit publish right at this second, I will do it shortly within the hour. But let me just go through. I'll tease it out now for anyone who wants to know the lineup. How about that?
Yes.
Okay. Let me get back to it. So, as y'all know, this is our fifth year, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a wild ride, wild journey, like getting to this point. We're doing the Australia camp too. Like, I don't know if anyone has any pull to add a few more hours to a day, but, if you could make days, maybe 28 hours, that would be fantastic. bad joke. That's a dad joke. Sorry. I don't know. Super psyched. We're doing a little bit different stuff this year, being our fifth year. For Firesides this year, we're going to do a five-year retrospective, and we're bringing back the first year Fireside Chat people. So we will have Aaron Sarofsky, Barton Damer, and Ryan Summers doing the first Fireside Chat as like a five-year retrospective. And they are the three that gave the first three Firesides back here in Vermont back in 2019. Obviously, a lot has changed in the last 5 years. So it will be really interesting, not only through the lens of like them as, you know, workers in this industry and owners in this industry, but just to hear their journeys of how they, you know, manage COVID times and all that stuff. And last time we had all of them together, Barton's team at Already Been Chewed was much smaller. And he, I remember vividly him asking Aaron questions about, like, if I grow this big, what are the challenges? And if I, and now he's like at that point too, he's grown. So it will be really interesting to see how, what happens with that discussion. The second one we have is Brandon Parvini. And if you're not familiar with Brandon Parvini, he has done lots of big time work that you've probably seen, from Super Bowl commercials to, I mean, I don't know. He's got his hands in a lot of stuff. Super knowledgeable guy, knows a lot about this industry, loves to just talk about the industry in general. This might be a nice kind of State of the Union type fireside. We'll see. But we're getting everyone kind of lined up now. And like, we're starting to chat about different topics and whatnot. Then the third is Joyce Ho, who is a creative director at Buck in New York.
Yes.
And you're probably familiar with a lot of her work as well. So excited to have all of these fireside chats. I think it's going to be a very nice, well-rounded kind of programming surrounding the fireside stuff. And then we're going to dive into the workshops now. So this year, we're trying to do, you know, we've always had a mix of like hands-on artistic workshops. And then also I like to still call them hands-on, like kind of business mindset, a little bit more cerebral type stuff. And so offering those types of workshops, I think, gives our programming a nice kind of, well, some good offerings. But this year we have a camper, a previous camper teaching a workshop. Well, let's see. Got two previous campers. Three. Anyway, the first is Donovan Brutus. And he be teaching.
So excited.
Yeah, Donovan will be teaching a workshop about aligning your art with your purpose.
Oh, so, cool.
This is going to be a little bit more like thinking about why you do what you do and a little bit deeper thought. But the talks we've had with Donovan about it already are phenomenal. And I cannot wait to have people take that workshop.
His work is amazing.
Next, we have Haley Atkins. Why did I say I always say Atkins. This fucking Atkins diet is like in my head. Haley Atkins from Motion Hatch. Super psyched. We've been trying to get her involved for a long time with camp, but she's going to kind of do a little bit more of that business mindset, kind of like that Motion Hatch mindset type stuff. So really excited about that. And then we're trying to figure out how we could possibly like connect these two workshops, but the next workshop I'm gonna mention is gonna be run by Jenny Davis, one of the co-founders of Mom, and her whole workshop's gonna kind of be like not beating the algorithm, but like using social for like good promotion, LinkedIn, stuff like that. So I think there's going to be some nice synergy between like the Haley's class with like kind of the business and then kind of like the self-promotion side of things with social and Jenny. So that should be really, really fun and cool. Then next, and this is in no particular order, I'm just going down the list. Noah Hornstein, who is going to be doing a class focused on, I guess it's more like color science, right? Like what do you know about color and what a color, like what a pixel has for color and like all the like super deep technical color space type. I don't know. I'm having a brain fart. but like color science, that's what I was trying to get at. Color science, like we always talk about sRGB, ACES, all the things and dots and blah. So really trying to understand that more, right? So he's got a great presentation and some great notes already pulled together about it all. So really excited to have him on board this year. Then we also have Clinton Jones coming back to do a workshop on photogrammetry. So we're, from what we kind of understand now, we're going to be using some of our cell phones and stuff to walk around camp, capture some really cool stuff and turn those into usable materials and assets. And then we have a duo teaching this year, and that's going to be Rebecca Olson and Casey Warren, who both run the Deducers workshops. And that's going to be focused more on like producing and stuff like that, but they've got a really great take on what they're going to do this year. And it's really going to start talking about scope creep and how to stop it and how to really set yourself up for success so you don't get so far down these lines that all of a sudden you're caught in the minutia of all these revisions and whatever. Anyway, or scope creeps. I am not doing justice to any of these workshops right now, but I'm just letting you know. We also have a former camper coming back to teach a wet workshop, and his name is Nick Snyder.
Yay!
So Nick Snyder, his wife, Sam, taught a producing workshop last year. But last year, I found out that Nick Snyder used to work the like local fairground circuit, like the county fairs. He would be traveling all around as a caricature artist. And so, you know, when you go to the boardwalk or whatever and you sit down and they draw you and your family or you and your significant other, whatever, that was him. So he's going to do a workshop about caricatures and how you look at faces and analyze things and exaggerate things. And so I think that's going to be a really interesting workshop, because not only are we going to walk away with really cool assets for us to have, but then like we'll really be able to like look and analyze and kind of see characters design a little bit differently or whatnot. So that's going to be really fun and cool. And like some of the stuff that he's already drawn to show us, I'm like, dude, you need to do this for like every single camper here. They're so good. So super psyched with him. Then we have two more.
Oh, two more.
We have two more. One, I'm only going to say one because we're still waiting on like the official confirmation. I've had like the yes and like the little side handshake, but like I need the email. So I'll leave him off for right now. But the last one that I think y'all will be excited for is Sarah Beth Morgan. We'll have her coming to teach a workshop. And what's so cool about it is not anything you would expect from her. Woo! It's awesome. We're kind of touting it as like the crafting corner. She's done a lot of really cool crafting in like upcycling type stuff now that she's a mom, and really trying to find some cool things, upcycle it to be something that is useful or cool for you or whatever. But that's going to be way more like hands-on. Let's get our hands dirty, paint, whatever. So that's going to be a super fun, like crafting class. So we're really excited to have this entire lineup. Like I said, we've got one more that we'll blast out too, but hopefully I can get confirmation shortly and I can actually hit publish with him on it. But we're really psyched. I mean, this is like an incredible lineup. I know that was a lot of information. Once you see it all in front of you on the website, it'll probably be a little bit more digestible, but super excited. We're bringing in some food trucks this year. We're doing like a bunch of things that should kind of elevate the experience for everybody because it is our fifth year. So Thank you to the U.S. sponsors right now. We have Camp MoGraph 2024 presented by Otoy. So thank you, Otoy. We also have Sony on board this year. So thank you, Sony. We have Grayscale Gorilla and Stash Magazine on board this year as well. And there's some other sponsors still kicking tires and waiting to sign a document to to, you know, commit. But once we have that commitment, we'll add them to the sponsor list. So anyway, really psyched. I hope you are too. It's going to be a phenomenal camp. The grounds are great. The everyone who's teaching a workshop is so fired up. All of the Fireside people we've already chatted with, they're super fired up, pun intended. But yeah, we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a good one. So tickets on sale April 20th at noon. Tickets this year will be pretty much the same as last year. There's a slight difference in community cabins, but that's it. We really tried our best to keep it the same price, even battling fucking inflation that has made everything else go up for us. So it's important that we keep this attainable for artists and working artists especially. So that's, you know, always top of mind for us. But I will be publishing the website later today. I will ping the Monday meeting channel and all that stuff too, so you know to go check it out at that point. So thank you all. Appreciate it. Sorry for rambling. Sorry for not getting it done, but it'll be done today.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Well, thanks everyone for joining this week's call. You can find us on all social media platforms by searching for Monday Meeting. Audio for the calls are posted each week on your podcast app of choice or available with show notes at mondaymeeting.org. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.